This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. In our previous episode, Ruby showed off her sewing skills. However, starting a job does not mean her problems are over.
Arcadia House was silent. Ruby woke in a sweat before the sky had lightened. She tiptoed to the lavatory. When she pulled the cistern chain, the flushing water seemed to roar in the silence. The pipes grumbled and screeched as she filled the basin to wash. Back in the room, Ruby balanced her open compact on the low wardrobe and experimented with the scarf, folding the green silk into a band to keep her hair away from her face, knotting it at the nape of her neck and hiding the ends under her hair, until it looked quite smart enough for a workroom. Close to the window, a magpie fluted. Soon, small birds were chorusing. Edie was still asleep, her knees drawn up to her chest. Ruby gave her a gentle shake. "Wake up, chicken. You're having an early breakfast." Edie slithered further under the blankets. Ruby yanked the bed covers back. "Up you get. Come on. I have to start at 8 o'clock.
"I'm still tired."
"Don't you want to come with me today?" Edie shot up.
"Truly?"
"I asked Madam, and she said as long as you keep out of the way and stay in the workroom with me, it might be all right." "You'd better bring Kidnapped. I'm sure Mrs. Thompson won't mind."
"I'm always keeping out of the way,"
Edie said, yawning, open-mouthed, and rubbed her eyes. "Don't yawn like that."
"I can't help it."
"Cover your mouth," said Ruby. "No one wants to see down your gullet." Edie was still getting into her clothes when Ruby started brushing her hair. "Hurry up. Get your shoes on and let's get to the bathroom. It'll be toast for breakfast and no mucking around, or you'll be left behind." Edie kept pace with Ruby as she strode along the pavement. The breeze was lighter when they got to Main Street. Over at the railway station, people were beginning to congregate, waiting for the morning train to come in. The traffic was busy as they stood at the Pitt Street intersection. A flat-deck truck rolled through with young men and boys crowded on the back. A good-looking boy, his long legs dangling over the end of the tray, waved. Edie waved back before Ruby could stop her.
"Where are those Māori boys going on that truck?" Edie said.
"Working on a farm or in a factory somewhere. Who knows?" There was a gap in the traffic, and Ruby pulled her across. "Keep up. We mustn't be late."
"Do we have to rush like this every day?"
"I'll talk to Madam. She may let us come a bit later in the holidays."
"When you get paid..."
"We'd better not count our chickens."
"What does that mean?" "People say it. Does anybody know what it means?"
"Just be quiet." The terms of her employment hadn't been discussed at all. She just hoped Edie wouldn't ruin it for her. One thing at a time, she told herself.
"I can't wait to get a gander at the hats," said Edie.
"For heaven's sake, don't use that language. Speak properly. What will people think with you talking like that?"
"Gander isn't swearing."
"No, but it's common."
"You say a lot of things are common." That's right. But other people...
Ruby stopped abruptly and stamped her foot.
Honestly, Edie, would you rather stay behind with Pim or spend the day playing chess with Mrs. Thompson?
It was an empty threat. Come hell or high water, those days were done.
No, I'll be good, Edie pleaded. Seen and not heard. Anyway, if you went back now, it'd make you late.
They walked on. Ruby quickened her pace.
Madam was adamant. You have to stay out of sight. All day?
Yes, all day. Don't worry, you'll be in the workroom with me. As they reached the square, Ruby looked ahead to the turret clock on the corner building that dominated the skyline. 8:25. She slowed to catch her breath. People passed the flower gardens on their way to work. By the pond, a young couple kissed before they parted for the day. Some were taking the last drag on their cigarettes, throwing the butts on the ground before hurrying to work.
"Can I go for a walk to the square while you're working?" said Edie.
"Certainly not."
"What if I get sick of reading?"
"Too bad. And you have to be quiet. When we're there, you are not allowed to chatter."
"Do you mean I can't talk?"
"Probably not." Edie slackened her pace to glance in a shop window. Ruby's tension was stretched.
"We don't have time to dawdle."
Edie trotted to catch up in time to avoid her mother grabbing her wrist.
"Why can't I see the hats in the shop?"
"You're not allowed. Customers who come in for one of Madam's hats won't want to see a child in there. It's not some fruit shop. Vardo is a high-class millinery salon." Madam's place hadn't seemed so far from Arcadia the day before. Ruby looked around. The lane that Madam told her to use, which led to the back entrance, must be nearby.
"Where are we going?" said Edie.
Ignoring her, Ruby led the way down a gravelly delivery lane between brick-walled buildings. Old brick cobbles were visible under the scant layer of shingle at their feet.
"Now listen."
Ruby expelled a breath and rotated her neck. "I want you to make a good impression. It's important. We'll be upstairs. I'll be working, and there's a little settee with a nice squab and everything. You can spend the day reading."
"The whole time?"
"Yes. I might ask Madam if you can do some cleaning or some sort of little job."
"Will I get paid?"
"Don't be silly."
"Oh, what about our lunch?"
"What do you think's in this paper bag? You've got a baked bean sandwich and a boiled egg."
"But I had baked beans for breakfast," said Edie.
"Don't you dare grizzle when we're there." A smart red MG Roadster had been backed into an open garage at the end of the lane, its pale-coloured canvas roof up. Another older car with faded paintwork was parked rather badly out in the open nearby.
"Ooh,"
Edie said, running over to the MG.
"I bet that's her car. But whose is that one?"
"Somebody who works nearby, I suppose." Ruby imagined Madam, her slim hands and short leather driving gloves gripping the wooden steering wheel of the MG, speeding like Stirling Moss. Or would she glide along sedately? At the white gate that Madam had described, they paused. A path of bricks cut through a tiny grassy yard with a broad, fruit-laden lemon tree. Beyond that, near the porch, was a wooden outhouse lavatory, painted bright red, with a large lavender bush next to it. Ruby was sure Madam's artist's touch had transformed what could have been old and ordinary into something picturesque.
"Here we are," Ruby said.
Madam stepped out from the shadow of the porch, smoking a slim black cigarette. She must have been watching them. Edie walked ahead, her hand extended.
"Hello, Madam. How do you do? My name's Edie."
Madame's eyes twinkled, and she shook Edie's hand delicately.
I am very pleased to meet you, Edith.
At once, Edie seemed to be under Madame's spell. Ruby smiled with pride, hoping Madame might be under Edie's spell too. Madame used a lidded ashtray to stub out the Sobrani and snapped it closed.
Come, coats there.
She pointed to a line of coat hooks.
Wash your hands here when you arrive.
The brass taps at the porcelain hand basin were polished. A spotless white towel was draped perfectly in the centre of a rail.
Follow me, said Madame.
The tips of her narrow fingers scarcely touched the banister as she lightly took the steep wooden staircase, her posture perfectly erect. Ruby was aware of her sore heel as she plodded up the stairs with as much poise as an exhausted laundry woman. Edie clambered up behind them, like some sort of hoofed animal.
This is the finishing room.
Madame flapped her hand at the settee under the sash window, indicating to Edie that she should put herself on it immediately, and handed Ruby a long smock to put over her clothes. Edie followed Madame's wordless direction obediently, and sat holding her book and her paper bag of lunch on her knee. Ruby spared her a smile.
This is where hats are trimmed, said Madame, lifting the dust cover off the work table with a magician's flourish. And your work.
Along the length of the table was a stack of hats and brimless capulets, and a line of bare pipettes. Between them, a row of wooden trays filled with guipure motifs, silk blossoms and decorative trims. Ruby tensed. She hoped she was as capable as her new employer seemed to expect. Madame gave her a reassuring smile. With the ends of her fingers, she lifted a capulet and carefully positioned it.
So.
The plain cap was transformed. Ruby saw how it would have a life of its own on the right head, at the right angle.
So, you see it?
Madame's face lit up like a young girl's.
The purpose of the poupette. Now come. Before you start work, you will meet my other girl, Janice. She works in the blocking room, where hats are born.
The door opened to a long room filled with warm air, heavy with a pungent chemical smell. A young woman stood bent over a humped shape of bright orange felt, near a contraption that emitted steam. Madame knocked on the open door to draw the girl's attention.
Janice, I am introducing you to Ruby, said Madame. She will work in our finishing room.
At the bench, a young woman, a patterned scarf over her head, looked up and passed her arm over her damp forehead.
Hello, said Ruby.
Hello.
Janice smiled pleasantly as she pulled a hanky out of her pocket to wipe her nose. Her age was indeterminable, although it was hard to tell through the cloud of steam. Large, slightly bulging eyes shone wetly, and Ruby saw a webbed scar on one of her reddened hands.
Welcome!
Janice's smile broadened.
This is my realm.
Come, Madame ordered, ushering Ruby out, adding, You can meet one another properly at morning tea time. Janice can explain more to you, how things are done here. If you are curious, when the day is finished, if she has time, she will show you things.
Madame left, after explaining the job for the day. Edie had made herself comfortable, staring out the window, her elbow on a plump, sun-faded, velveteen cushion.
Aren't you going to read? Ruby said.
Can I eat my lunch?
No, just get on with reading. It'll be morning tea time before you know it, and you can have a cup of tea with me.
Countless stitches, and what seemed like hours later, there was a thump as Robert Louis Stevenson hit the floor. Edie had fallen asleep. Ruby turned back to her work.
She didn't hear Janice walk up behind her. By the way, one of Madam's rules? Janice's tone was hushed. We're expected to move around the place without making any noise at all. It takes practice, but you get used to it. I can imagine a few situations where a knack like that could be handy. She chuckled behind her hand. And we're only allowed to talk really, really quietly. That's the part I find a pain. Anyway, it's time for tea. I'll bring the tea up. Give me a hand if you like. Ruby prodded Edie awake. Edie, it's morning tea time. Wake up and meet Miss... I'm sorry, Janice, I don't know your proper name. Edie squinted up at Janice. Oh, I'm not Miss anything, and I don't much care about being proper. Janice grinned and shook Edie's hand. Call me Auntie Janice if you like. Pleased to meet you, Edie. You'd better go down to the loo, said Ruby.
I don't need to, said Edie.
Better go now, love, said Janice. Save tromping on the stairs later. Give us a hand with the tea things if you like, Edie. I'll give you a biscuit.
Auntie Janice, aren't we allowed in the shop? Edie asked Janice.
Ruby cast Edie a black look.
Shh! Remember to talk quietly.
Janice put a finger to her lips.
Madam might show you one day. Better not pester her about it, though.
I told you, didn't I? Ruby said.
And Ruby, said Janice, there's another thing to remember. Madam's fussy about us taking our smocks off for morning tea and lunchtime. They go on the hook over there.
Without her smock, Janice was shapely. Her straight skirt hugged her curved hips, which rolled smoothly as she took one step after the other. At the lift of her knees, the vent at the back of her skirt opened, revealing the lace edge of her slip. One seam of her stockings was slightly crooked. Ruby smiled. Wouldn't like to be proper. How endearing.
Thank goodness for morning tea.
Janice spoke quietly as she set out the cups.
I get so parched. Go on, help yourself to a bicky. I'll pour. Edie, take two if you like. My sister made them. She does lovely Belgians too. She'll do them next week, I hope.
Thanks, said Ruby, grateful for Janice's friendliness as much as the biscuit. Janice's hair was almost black, and her high cheekbones and strikingly pale complexion was made extraordinary by a wine-coloured birthmark, like a splash on the left side of her jawline that spilled down from her earlobe. She could be Ruby's age, it was hard to tell. In spite of the fine lines at the corners of her amber-flecked eyes and laugh lines at the side of her mouth, there was an air of wholesome, untouched, ever-youthfulness about her. Edie nibbled her biscuit, her stare shifting from Janice's birthmark to the scar on her hand. Oh, do you see that? Janice smiled. That's there to remind me to be more careful with the steamer. Did that when I started working here. It takes a bit of practice to turn pieces of felt into hats. When you don't know what you're doing, you get to hurt yourself, don't you?
That's true of a lot of things, Ruby said.
Oh, you're a brain box. Janice pushed the biscuit tin toward her.
Have another bicky, go on. You'd never have to worry about getting fat. You'd have to eat tinfuls.
Ruby came close to laughing. It was more than the tea and biscuits that was refreshing her. Sitting with Janice and Edie, speaking in low voices, reminded her of her school days, when she had innocent friendships, when girls shared meaningless secrets and conspiratorial whispers. Soon she started to worry about not having anything to bring to reciprocate after accepting the biscuits. Perhaps it wouldn't matter. Perhaps Janice wouldn't think anything of it. There was bound to be time to think of something to make up for it.
You've done marvelously well today, Janice confided. You're almost as quick as the other girl. I don't suppose Madam told you about Julie.
Ruby shook her head, her mouth full of biscuit, and washed it down with the last of her tea.
Janice leaned forward, whispering, "No, I don't suppose she would. Julie's kid is sick. They're praying it isn't polio. She's churchy. Everyone is around here. What are you?"
"What?
Not Roman, are you? Not that it matters, I suppose."
There wasn't time to answer before Janice rushed on.
"Anyway, the whole lot of them must be praying like mad. It might be meningitis or rheumatic fever. Kids get all sorts, don't they? Who knows?"
"I heard it's hard to tell," said Ruby, looking over at Edie, who'd gone back to the settee with her book.
"Some of those diseases start out like the flu. My grandfather died of that. Got back from the Great War without a scratch. Then, pop, dead from the influenza."
Janice shrugged.
"But polio's really awful, isn't it? Really awful."
"Yes."
"I heard a kid down the road got it. Terrible. I saw on the newsreel. The polio kids have to live in these iron lung machine things, trapped for the rest of their lives, unable to move. Imagine."
Ruby turned away and looked at Edie, who was gazing out the window again, her finger between the pages of the book. She heard Janice jam the lid back on the biscuit tin.
"I'll give you a hand to wash up," said Ruby.
"All right. Thanks," said Janice. The girl might be flighty, and she talked too much, but Janice made Ruby smile.
The MG wasn't in the garage when Ruby helped Janice unfold three deck chairs on the patch of grass next to the lemon tree.
"Sometimes Madam goes out at lunchtime," said Janice. "It's a gorgeous day, and we can talk normally out here."
"Is that yours?"
Edie pointed to the old car.
"That's Muriel. She's a standard 10 Vauxhall. A jolly fine car," Janice said good-naturedly.
"My sister's husband bought it new, just before they sent him off overseas. He didn't come home. I'm Beryl's chauffeur to and from the mill. Beryl can't drive. She used to cycle till an idiot in a Buick ran into her."
Ruby watched Edie bite into her boiled egg. It had been silly of her not accepting Pim's offer of leftovers for lunch.
"Beryl and the bike got badly bent up," Janice was saying. The egg was gone, and Edie slouched in the deck chair, biting into the sandwich. A pale sparrow swooped as a baked bean fell to the ground. Janice chattered on. "She won't let me have Muriel to myself, even though I'm the one driving her to the mill to save her walking across town with her gammy leg." A gang of sparrows joined the one begging at Edie's feet.
"Anyone want an apple?" Janice said.
"No, thanks."
Edie threw a corner of crust to the birds.
"If you're sure," said Ruby.
"You're welcome to it," said Janice.
"Catch."
"Thanks."
Crunching the Granny Smith, she didn't take in much of Janice talking about herself and the fiancé who'd jilted her. The sweet tartness of the apple was exhilarating.
"Better to find out before the wedding," Janice was saying.
With her mouth full of apple, Ruby could only nod agreement without knowing what had been said before. Janice consulted the watch that was pinned to her cardigan.
"We'd better get back. Goodness knows how she does it. Maybe she's one of those psychics."
"What? Who?" said Ruby.
"I'm talking about Madam," Janice said, dusting crumbs off her skirt.
"She seems to have everything timed to the minutest second. She knows exactly how long we take lunch for, and when we go back to work, by how much we've done. If she thinks it's less than we should have, we have to account for it."
"Gosh. You've got to admit she's got a mysterious way about her."
Janice folded her chair.
"No one knows where she's from, you know. Somewhere in Europe. Someone said she's Austrian. Maybe she's Transylvanian. But that can't be right. They don't go out in the daylight, do they?"
Laughing was getting easier.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialised novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8pm next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.